Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, girl. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
Right, we need some help, man. Wake up, everybody. Wake up to MPH Radio. You listen to the voice of MPH Radio. And today our theme will be Let's Get Serious. That's right. This is serious time, and we need to get serious. We can discuss some issues as it relates to this topic. But like always, what we want to do at this point in time is to start you all with our normal routine, which is giving you something to think about. And the concept of what is freedom, we will continue this role discussing the various concepts of freedom. And we want to give you something to think about. At the end of the program, we're going to pose this question as it relates to freedom. But to give you something to think about when we talk about the concepts of freedom, there are some people believe that there are three particular forms of freedom. The first one is freedom from. They say that's a reaction to something. The second one is 3 to 4, there is something in the context of maybe seeking a revolution to change the challenge. But 3 to 4, unless, or the third concept is just freedom. That's the issue, just being rebellious or just being, just freedom, freedom to do. Those are the three types or forms of freedom that some people have defined. We'll actually ask the question, one of three, which one is most important? That's our question today. We want you to think about it. And right now, what we're going to do, we want you to get out your pen and paper. We're going to our station break. And when we come back, we're going to give you some little black mini facts about Susie. We're going to do some black mini facts. So please get out your pen and pencil. And we'll be right back. You'll listen to MPH Radio.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Fast eyes burst into rhythm. Where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
That's right. Take me to another land, and we're going to do that. We would like to say we're going to make a quick adjustment instead of going to our black mini facts. That will be later on the program. What we want to do is give our respect to the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March, which was originally first took place in October 16, 1995. And to do this, we have with us Brother Alex Joyner. He have written a piece as he give tribute and thanks to the Million Man March, and last weekend was our 25th anniversary, and we'd like to give our respects to that particular anniversary and that great event by bringing Mr. Alex Joyner. Mr. Alex, welcome to Missing Pages History.
Thank you, Brother Rawson. And again, with the staff of the Missing Pages of History, the many listeners and callers that have joined me today in this inspiring moment of history. Because today I want to talk to you about marching in an army of men surrounded by a united faith. 1 million men. One God was on many of the signs held up high that day. So millions around the world could see the true strength of the people of color, the Jews, Muslims, Christians, Catholics, Protestants, and other men of faith who stood shoulder to shoulder with locked hands and bowed heads and pledged to love his brother as he loved himself. They upheld the phrase, "I am my brother's keeper." So to stand with so many and be humble before God, it wasn't about the shirts or the t-shirts and jeans they wore that day, nor was it the fancy shoes or sneakers they had on their feet. It was about the message they came to hear, the fellowship of brotherhood they sought, and the atonement to be a better man of color. You see, my listeners, a great call went all out over the world. Wanted 1 million black men. And they responded in droves. Long live the spirit of the Million Man March. Just a second, Mr. Lee. I have a slight little problem here. All right, thank you, listeners, for holding on there a minute. A little few technical difficulties there. Wanted 1 million black men. For all the men that answered the call for the Million Man March in Washington, D.C., October 16, 1995, I thank you. I have been talking and helping find you. Many a man, his way to the nation's capital. It was an event I had planned to attend, but because of surgery, I could not. But my heart and spirit rode with them. They traveled by cars, trains, buses, airplanes, and even walked to this event that would change their lives forever. Wanted 1 million black men, any age, type, background, or belief. Some people of color missed the point and were swept up in the moment and not the substance. My father and I shared a moment in history that unfolded before the nation's eyes. I felt a true fellowship of love. I remember different men saying, stand for something or you will fall for anything. United we prosper, divided we fall. Stand up for what you believe in, for no one man controls your success or fate. We must find common cause to love ourselves and one another. People all over the world will be touched by what we say and do. Make America to know her sin. To see that she owes something to the people who built their country and yet has not received justice. There's two Americas, one black, one white, separate and unequal, one just, one unjust. The basic reasons for the Million Man March was for atonement and reconciliation. 1 million black men stood tall, stood strong, stood together, stood in prayer, stood in peace, stood with one faith in God. I sat in my barbershop where the patrons agreed that this event would make history. No matter who made the call, black men should attend. We understand that Minister Louis Farrakhan initiated the march along with Jesse Jackson, Benita Chavis, Joseph Lowery, Al Shapley, and many others. The message they would deliver would be powerful. Many men called me. Some of these men had never even left the state, but were now excited to join their brothers in protest. Some had not spoken to their families or seen their children for years, and now desire to build back those relationships. I asked a friend if he would represent our community. We hugged and prayed that his drive would be quick and safe. My heart felt heavy, and I was so discouraged and frustrated by not being able to participate. On TV, to see the cars, buses, trains, and planes were full of black men traveling together was unbelievable. Wendell Moore of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who walked with 60 other men to Washington, D.C., took them 4 days to walk over 120 miles, stopping at colleges and churches, taking the path of the Underground Railroad to reconnect with history. Moore said, this march was long overdue. We rewrote history, and I wanted to be part of it. I marched for all those brothers who could not be part of it. I let the younger brothers know that this march is for the next generation of brothers, that the struggle is far from over. Over 1,500 women came in support of the march, and many were proud and showed a new respect for these brothers doing something positive to change history and to be atoned. Yes, cars were packed with black men honking their horns and flashing their lights as the helicopters of the park police buzzed over the interstate. Other young men stuck their clenched fists through the sunroof of cars in a show of solidarity. The shouts of black pride ruled the day and night. Unemployed men, drug dealers, gang members, ex-felons, deadbeat dads, stood side by side with preachers, law enforcement officers, lawyers, judges, teachers, doctors, and other professionals, and held their heads and hands up in universal pride. This moment was much bigger than them. It was a sea of blackness surrounding more than 22 blocks of the mall, from the steps of the U.S. Capitol to the Washington Monument. It was about black hope, dignity, peace, knowledge, and the trust for the new black man to be a better provider for his family and community. For centuries ago, near this moment, their ancestors, weighed down by the chains and torture of slavery, were humiliated and sold into bondage for life. They were sold like livestock and treated more savagely than any human being before or after history has been recorded. America has had no shame and given no apologies for their mistreatment. On this day, these men stood there in the spirit of unity. As the spirit moved me, I came to a great peace and love for my brothers in this struggle to be further loved and accepted by the world as I am somebody. Archbishop Stallings said, I decided on faith as a thing. If there's one element that has held the black community together, it has been faith. There's an old song that goes, we come this far by faith, leaning on the Lord, trusting his holy word. He hasn't failed us yet. We've endured slavery, hardship, racism, discrimination, and we still hold our heads up high with a blessed assurance that the Lord will make a way somehow. We are held together by spiritual roots, by self-determination to take ownership and control our destiny. Since the days of slavery, prayer and song have been served as the spiritual threads that bond us together as a people. These prayers and songs lift us up in spirits when we are down and give us a chance to thank our Creator as we rejoice. Then the Archbishop gave a thunderous prayer of atonement and hope. 1 million men prayed in unison with hands held, hearts and minds open, and love flowing from Washington, D.C. to heaven. I'm sure God smiled at this embrace of the power of love and decency of men of all faiths during this moment to say the bigotry, hate, ridicule, and injustice that the black man had made it this far, and now he deserves to be treated as equal by the world. What a sight to behold. It was magnificent. Many of the men were moved by the power of faith that day and returned home and sought redemption. I cannot see you, but I can feel your spirit, and I feel your presence, Stevie Wonder told the cheering assembly. No matter what we may be in class, we are one people. I love you. Moments later, Stevie Wonder serenaded the crowd with a music tribute of black love, peace, hope, and soul. Music filled them all and warmed the souls of marchers from sunrise to sunset. From the African drummers to the solar, the spirit of the togetherness sung, and the men danced and celebrated. Yes, the day was like no other, and no day has been like it since for the black man. Jesse Jackson asked, so why did 1 million black men come when called? Why march? Father King said it was a shameful condition of the Negro. Today, it's disgraceful. Why do we march? Because our babies die early. Why do we march? Because we're less able to get a primary or secondary education. Why do we march? Because the media stereotypes us. We are projected as less intelligent than we are, less hardworking than we are, less universal than we are, less patriotic than we are, and more violent than we are. Why do we march? We are less able to borrow money in a system built on credit and risk. Why do we march? Because we're trapped in second-class schools and first-class jails. What is the crisis? Wealth going upward, jobs going downward. How good it is to hear the sounds of chains and shackles breaking from the ankles and minds of men. How beautiful to see the rejected stone stand up, become the cornerstones of a new spiritual social order. In the spirit of atonement, we pray to God to forgive us our sins and our foolish ways as we seek to do better and never become bitter, and let nothing, nobody, stand between us and the love of God. The idea of 1 million men has touched a nerve deep in the heart of people yearning to breathe free. Why are we here today? Because we're attacked by the court, legislators, mass media. We are despised. Racists attacked us for the sport to win votes. We're under attack for sport to make money. But I tell you today, rabbit hunting ain't fun when the rabbits stop running and start fighting back. There's a structural malfunction in America. It was structured in the Constitution, and they refer to us as three-fifths of a human being legally. That's why there's a crack in the Liberty Bell. We wanted America, all of us, to play on an even playing field by one set of rules. As the day move on, Minister Farrakhan sealed the days of the march with knowledge and dignity of owning up to the necessary changes in life I committed to the Million Man March Pledge. These men recited his uplifting pledge, and many were carried out as others didn't care or soon forgot the promise they made that day. I acknowledge with my father, Minister Farrakhan's serious tone of respect to move forward as a better man to his woman, his family, and his community. He said, brothers, when you go home, we got to register eligible, unregistered brothers and sisters. So you go home and find more like yourself. You register them and get them to vote. Whatever party's in existence after election, they got to speak to our agenda. And so we stand here today at this historic moment, standing in the place of those who did not make it today. We're standing in the blood of our ancestors. We're standing on the blood of those who died in the Middle East, who died in the fields and swamps of America, who died from the hanging in the trees of the South, who died in the cells of their jails, who died on the highways and in fratricidal conflict that rages within our community. We are standing on the sacrifice of the lives of those heroes, our great men and women, that we today may accept responsibility that life imposes upon each traveler comes this way. Now, brother, moral and spiritual renewal is a necessity. I spoke to my brothers in ministry. We shared love, peace, and happiness, rejoicing at this wonderful sight of men committing themselves to better life. After watching the march together, I asked my father, Daddy, did you ever believe that a million black men would stand on the step of freedom in Washington, D.C.? He responded, today, as with all days, was a start. As a man plants a garden, that man has to tend that garden. And with the help of the Lord, along with the sunshine and a good rain, then he may have sown good seed for his future. We, son, have a long way to go to be fruitful and multiply our own conscience of right. Well, Dad, the road may be long, hard, and cruel, but we will endure. You taught your children and your grandchildren how to plant a good, everlasting garden of hope and faith. I hug my sons tighter and longer than ever that night. I had a garden to tend to. Long live the spirit of the Million Man March. Long live the spirit of the Million Man March. Long live the spirit of the Million Man March. Thank you, Mr.
Yeah, I just heard Brother Alex Jordan paying his tribute to the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March, which took place last weekend. What we're gonna do right now, take a quick break, and when we come back, we have with us Brother Bilal Sunny Ali. Our theme today is Let's Get Serious. This is some serious matter in which the brother is going to give us an update on our brother, what's going on with our brother Jamil Alameen, formerly known as H-Rep Brown. Don't you go nowhere. This is MPH Radio.
I'm
That's right. Welcome back to MPH Radio. And when you talk about Let's Get Serious and this question that they can't take away your dignity, we have with us right now a great example of a revolutionary brother who has stood tall for the interests of his people and humanity. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to get very serious with Brother Bilal Sani Ali, who represents the Jamil Alameen Freedom Movement. And what he's going to do right now, he can give us an update on the situation. But before he does that, Brother Bilal, I would like for you first briefly just maybe give us a little backdrop real quick, particularly for some of our youth. We have to teach them. Who was Brother Jamil Alameen, formerly known as H.R. Brown? Give us a little synopsis on the importance of this brother and his work to his people.
I seek refuge in Allah against misleading and being misled. I seek refuge in Allah against betrayal and being betrayed into ignorance by others. I ask Allah to guide my heart, to please guide my tongue, and allow me to impart what it is they're asking of me, and hoping that it may be of some benefit to it as I impart that. Assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Lee. Thank you for inviting me on this show, and thank you to all your listening audience out there for waiting. And you said give a brief. It's hard to give a brief description of such a long history of sacrifice that has been performed in the life of Imam Jamil Abdullah Alameen, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. But I'll start and do as best as I can. And we can go back to the early to the mid-60s. He was a part of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. As a matter of fact, he was the chairman for the state of Alabama. And in Alabama, in Greene County and in Lowndes County, he worked in those two particular rural counties, which were majority black population, to register people to vote and to teach people about the importance of voting, to teach people about the importance of developing a mechanism whereby we can project and maintain our self-determination. In that struggle to teach people to vote at that time in the rural South, as well as in this particular time, the opposition was great. The opposition was shooting at us. The opposition was burning our houses down. The opposition was in evicting us from our place of residence. Many of the African people at that time were tenant farmers, also known as sharecroppers. And as sharecroppers, they didn't own the land that they lived on, and they got put off the land. When they were put off the land, they had to live in tents. But those people who owned land allowed them to stay in tents and build tents. And one of those settlements of tents is now a black city known as Whitehall, Alabama. Well, it's right there where the Klan was shooting at people and burning and attempting to burn those tents down, where H.R.A.P. Brown and others who were part of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee were shooting back and encouraging people to get guns and shooting back. And that's the time when people would refer to, people talk about the H.R.A.P. Brown law. The H.R.A.P. Brown law was a bill that was passed by the House and the Senate back in those days, making it a crime to travel across state lines to encourage violence. They based that on the fact that he encouraged people to practice self-defense. He practiced self-defense, and he encouraged people to practice self-defense. He said if you're going to vote, then you'd have to get a gun to defend yourself. As a matter of fact, that's where the Black Panther Party came from. What they used to say at that time is, vote for the Black Panther, because the Black Panther was the symbol on the ticket that they used in the Lowndes County Freedom Organization. They would say, vote for the Black Panther and go home. And that expression, go home, meant go home and get your gun and sit at the porch or sit in the window, like you see pictures of Malcolm X standing by his window with a carbine. That's what go home meant. Go home and protect your family, because those people who do not want us to vote will be coming at you to burn your house down or to kill you. And so this is the beginning of the life of struggle. It's not the beginning of his life of struggle, but this is where I wanted to start in talking to you about the legacy of this brother who is now known today as Jameel Abdullah Alameen. He continued to struggle and encourage people to work on forms of self-determination. He later, just to speed things up, he later came to Atlanta after years and years of trumped-up charges, which just about every time he was arrested, it was a false charge. Even the charge in which he spent time in New York on, where they say he was charged with robbery, you know, realize some of the evidence, part of the evidence that they used in that trial to say he robbed people was his wallet and the wallet of his co-defendants. But when he was freed from that trial, when he was freed and on parole from those charges in New York, he came to Atlanta, Georgia, where he had, having already taken the Declaration of Faith and become a Muslim, that's one who follows the guidance of Allah as dictated by the Quran and the practices of Prophet Muhammad, and peace and love and blessings be upon him. He became the leader of a small community in Atlanta, Georgia, where he encouraged the people to refrain from drug abuse and refrain from criminal activity, where they actually created, by developing a security force amongst the believers at that masjid, to establish a territory of integrity for several blocks, about a half a mile from the masjid outward, where no drugs were sold, no crimes were committed, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, they was hoping it would be finally. He's been sitting in jail for the past 20 years in federal prison for a crime which, for the day after the crime was committed. That crime was committed on March 16, 2000, the shooting of a sheriff deputy and the wounding of another. On the morning of March 17, somebody had committed a confession admitting that they were guilty of the crime, and they did not, they have never put that person on trial or even questioned that person any further about it. They wanted to put the person who I've just been talking about, they wanted to put him in jail so he could stop influencing people in the way that he's influenced people. And that's the background. That's as short as I can make it, the background that you asked me about Imam Jameel forming a trap brow.
Now, can you just briefly a little bit talk in general about his character when he was in the community, the kind of beautiful work, from what I understand, he was doing in the community, was seen to be something that people would admire. You want somebody to do the kind of work that he was doing in the community. Can you describe how he had positively impacted the various communities down in the Atlanta area in Georgia?
Well, he was an athlete growing up, and he was an athlete when he was in college. So he was always on the basketball court a lot. He played football, and he excelled in basketball, football, and track. And so he was always amongst the youth, those younger than him, training them in basketball. He was a coach, and you know what a coach type is in our community. He was a coach type of brother with the their younger brothers and sisters in the community. And he was one to be admired. He owned a store, and people could get whatever they needed if they had the money or didn't have the money. He would let them go. He would let it go. He would just keep a record of it, and advise them to uphold their pledge to pay the whatever was due to them. But he was fair and taught fairness in that regard. He didn't just talk about it on Friday from the pulpit. He practiced it every day. He practiced fairness, honesty, and encouraging the youth. And as he said, he established that area of integrity. But many of the people who have been involved in drug trafficking and in other crimes would come and seek him out, to come and talk to him, because they were interested, just like you were asking what kind of man he is. They would hear about what kind of man he is, and they'd want to come meet him. And he was never too busy to meet with anyone, regardless of their station in life. He was never too busy to meet with anyone and to sit and talk with anyone.
Okay, so pick up wherever you want to explain how you end up being a political prisoner in a prison of war.
Okay, well, he's been, he describes himself as a prisoner at war. Because he's been such since he was 16 years old. He's always been, like I mentioned before, always on trumped up charges. And a lot of the information that I'm given in part can be studied in full if people would go to the website www.imamjamilactionnetwork.org. That's imamjamilactionnetwork.org. And also the website www.whathappenedtorap. That's what happened. Use the number 2, rap.com. Those two websites will give you the information, particularly on about his life. And What Happened to Rap will particularly focus on what has happened since March the 16th, 2000. It starts in 1999. He was stopped in Cobb County while driving a vehicle which was said to look suspicious. That may sound familiar. It may have happened to you. It may have happened to anybody out there listening, that you're driving a vehicle and all of a sudden they stop you and they ask you a bunch of questions. They said that this vehicle was they said that it was a stolen vehicle. They checked it out and they said that they found that the vehicle had been stolen, but all of the paperwork that he had on it would show that he had paid for the vehicle and he had bought it off of a lot in the Atlanta area, and that he had legally paid for this vehicle. And in further investigation, they found that the car lot that he bought the vehicle from was involved in a ring of car thievery. So any car that anybody bought off this lot was liable to be a stolen car. So, but there was no further investigation. Once that was found out, nobody from that car lot dealership was ever cited for any improprieties. But however, Imam Jamil Al-Amin was made to come to court to focus on a summons that was issued for driving a stolen vehicle and also for impersonating a police officer. That charge came from the fact, like I had mentioned, he was developing in Whitehall, Alabama. That's that same Whitehall, Alabama that I talked about earlier in terms of it grew out of some black people who owned property and the tent city that was created by those who were thrown off the property that they were living on as tenant farmers, as sharecroppers, and had to live there that he had defended. But right in that town where we were developing an Islamic community, the mayor of that town, Mayor Johnny Jackson, had given him a police auxiliary badge because that was in order so that he would have the firm confirmation of the city and the police department in his working with the youth in that area of Alabama. He was actually an auxiliary officer in the auxiliary police department, and that's what auxiliary police department, that's what auxiliary police means. It's extra duty. It's not crime-fighting duties, but it's extra legal duties that the members have. And so he had such a bad thing, and the mayor sent a letter to the court saying that he had been awarded that badge in Whitehall, Alabama, by the mayor, the city council, and but they still charged him with impersonating a police officer, and they charged him. And so when he went to court on that day, and it was snowing that day, which is very rare to happen in Atlanta. They have a snowy day. But he had a snowy day in Atlanta. And we say that happens because man plans for law plans. So the law is the best of plans.
Okay.
And he closed the courtroom. But 2 hours later, the judge went back in the courtroom and called the name of Imam Jamil Al-Amin and put out a bench warrant for failure to appear for court that day. Put out a bench warrant for a day that court was closed. And for that reason, two deputy sheriffs were in the Atlanta area serving that bench warrant that night when they were shot by, at that point, an unknown assailant, but they blamed that shooting on Imam Jamil Al-Amin. And like we said, the assailant confessed to who he was and what he was doing there at the time and told the story. And he did the description of the assailant that the sheriff deputies gave, and the sheriff deputies said that they wounded their assailant, and this person was also wounded. However, Imam Jamil has been sitting in jail, sitting in prison, in the state prison for a while, and then for over 17 years in federal prison because the state of Georgia said he was too hot to handle. But that's the circumstances on which he's presently being held in prison, for which we have a petition that you can find at those websites that I also gave. You can also find a petition demanding his release and demanding at least a new trial, but demanding justice in the case of Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as H.R.F. Brown.
Okay, one important piece for my understanding of his case, I believe there's a battle to get a retrial. That was a confession by the individual who stated that he was the one who did the shooting. Can you just give us what's the legal, present legal conditions on the possibility of any possibility of a retrial or any kind of way of having them to maybe be released based upon new evidence?
That's what I was describing. As you know, if someone confesses to a crime that someone's incarcerated for, they will let that person who's incarcerated for out. So we say it's not the legal basis. Everybody understands the legal basis, but we're trying to express that it's a matter of war. And unless people understand that, and unless people sign the petition, which make a right. Excuse me. excuse me, I'm en route to a rally on Imam Jamil's behalf. I was just giving directions, and then make a right when we get to the light. And so, and being that it's war and that it's people's war, we're asking people to engage in. Because if it was just a matter of legality, he never would have been arrested. Because this person confessed, as I've been repeatedly saying, this person confessed 4 days before Imam Jamil was taken into custody. If it was a matter of legality, he would not have been arrested. So it's not just, we're not just talking about legality here. We're talking about people's war. And in people's war, all of the people must be engaged, and we must show strength. We must show strength. First sign of show of strength that we're asking people to do is go to those websites and find the petition and sign the petition and circulate the petition. We ask people to sign the petition and then get your wife or your significant other to sign it. Get your children to sign it. Get your parents to sign it. Get your coworkers to sign it. Get people who worship with you to sign it. Get people in your organization to sign it. We want millions of people to sign this petition. Millions of people have been signing petitions for Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. And not to take anything away from George Floyd or Breonna Taylor and over the fact that they lost their lives, but they were practically unknown. Imam Jamil, formerly known as H.R.F. Brown, has a long history of 60 years of putting his life on the line to defend the rights of our people. And a people who is so well known, people shouldn't be so laid back. Shouldn't be so laid back and saying and referring to this as a legal matter. Because I said, if this was legal, it wouldn't be a matter. It would not even be a matter. So we want people to understand that war is being made against you and that you are succumbing to the war if you don't sign the petition, if you don't show up when he asks people to show up in support of him. And that's what we're encouraging people to do. We thank everybody for every little bit of help that they can do. We realize that everybody is not possessed with the same level of stamina and strength and understanding, but we are trying to encourage people. We're trying to provide this understanding by providing the information to back up everything that we're saying. And so, and with that information and with the knowledge that he has laid his life on the line, that he put his life on the line in the early stages when people were just starting to vote in this country, when all people were starting to vote, not just black people, women couldn't vote, poor white people couldn't vote. People couldn't vote, period. And people were being made war against, hot war, burning, shooting at them for daring to exercise this one God-given right, the right to vote. And a person of such stature, and it should not be one who elected officials leave behind. All elected officials, we say, all elected officials who are not taking a stand on this case, in this particular election season, which everybody's saying, this is the election that your life, your future depends on this election. If this is so, then we should look at the person who brought about the reality that people would go and invite the vote. They laid the basis of encouragement by standing up against those who would kill us or maim us or run us off of our own property or run us off of property that they considered us sharecropping on, and such a man should be revered and such a history should be talked about throughout this electoral season, this very important electoral season, as important as it was back as it is now. It was just as important, even more important back then, because you wouldn't even have the amount of elected officials that you have now had not he encouraged people and defended people and encouraged people to defend themselves as they went about the business of choosing their own elected officials and choosing their own candidates and voting for them.
You know, Brother Bilal, you made a real interesting point, and I concur with you. When you look at this so-called movement, Black Lives Matter or African Lives Matter, definitely, you know, there's a contradiction if they don't give that report and come forward and support our brother who made many of these conditions possible. So it's a real noted point that people must pay attention to. But in terms of the petition, are there any other things people can do to support our brother? How is he doing health-wise, and are there people available to come to communities to do workshops and talk about it and popularize his case? Because right now they're trying to treat it as if it, a missing page of our people history, and we want to correct that wrong.
Yeah, and we appreciate you helping to correct that wrong. We appreciate the work that the All Our People's Revolutionary Party has done in doing a very good article last year when he was up for appeal. There was an article printed, and we also want to remind people that that is the All African People's Party, which one of the founders of which was Kwame Ture, who stood side by side with them in those rural communities and stood side by side with him with arms in hand to shoot back at the Klan during that time. So this you having me on the radio is part of a long history of the two of them being together and the two of us being together right now represents a long history of solidarity in uniting and to oppose our opposition, to oppose our enemy, and to struggle on behalf of our people's self-determination and our people's liberation. What we encourage people to do is to come into the community and to visit Atlanta, to come into Alabama and to visit Whitehall, Alabama, and to visit other rural communities in Alabama, because the struggle is still going on. There are many counties which, as a result of that struggle, have become black-run counties. And these counties must be supported today, because this is the basis of our territorial claim to land and power, so that we can develop bases of power outside of the continent of Africa. The African people can develop the bases of power. So we encourage people to come and do that. One of the things that Imam Jamil encouraged us to do, in spite of the fact that we don't adhere to that, he says, don't worry about them in the prison. He says, don't worry about Jews in here. He said, we're going to make it. He says, we got to make it. He said, man, y'all get concerned about what's going on out there. I'll be concerned about who's gonna develop the programs that feed the children that need to be fed, that go hungry when they go into school. Who's gonna open up schools and teach the children? He said, and who's gonna deal with the medical neglect? Who's gonna deal with the issues that facing the people most? He says that's what we should be facing. So when I mentioned earlier that it's people's war, that's one of the things that he encouraged us to do, is to be concerned about our community. Be concerned about our community, and you can most help him while he's inside by being concerned about your community out here on the outside, and being concerned about your community while at the same time we encourage people to get involved in organizing, get involved in developing mechanisms by which you can support political prisoners, find out about the political prisoners and ways to support them. There are groups that are doing that work and we encourage people to find out more about that work, and we direct people to those websites again, because those websites you can gain a lot more information than I could possibly give in a radio interview.
All right, Bilal, we have a few people who might have a question, so dealing with how can we free Brother Jamil Amin, formerly known as H.R.F. Brown. Our lines are open. And if you can take one or two questions, we'll appreciate it. Then we know you had a rally that you got to go to. Let me just even get one or two callers in. If we can, then we'll let you leave. Thank you for your generous time. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to... Brother Alex, we will bring you back in. You've been listening to an update with Jamil Amin, formerly known as H.R.F. Brown, who many people knew him back in the day, who was an organizer for SNCC and the Black Panther Party. But do you have any comments or questions for Brother Bilal as it relates to Brother Jamil Amin?
Yes. I want to thank Brother Bilal for coming on today and expressing this great concern for a noble gentleman that had an opportunity to go out and help ones that couldn't read, ones that could barely, ones that could barely talk, to register to vote when we had to count jars of jelly beans, asked all kinds of ridiculous questions, so that we could cast a ballot. That ballot now is the most important thing that should be of your concern over the next few weeks, as in far, how far you will proceed with the different aspects of your own life. The power of the vote is so powerful to the people when they use it. To not to use it, to ignore it, to not go to the polls, whether you vote for or against, is harmful to anyone that sits at home and say, let the other guy have his way. Yes, this is an important election. And when we go in that ballot box and we start checking down that line for whatever party that there may be, I would like a lot of people to think about the last debate. A question was asked, and that was, what about the talk that we have to give our young brothers and sisters every time they leave home, to be in the car, to be in the nightclub, to be in a restaurant, to be anywhere? Because we had to fight for the right of emancipation. We were given the paper that said we were free. But then others ignored that paper, tried to disown that paper, and today still ignores that paper. So when we go in that ballot box, you think about one gentleman gave an answer that said, yes, you got to put your hands on the wheel. You got to say yes, sir, and no, sir, because you want to go home that night. You don't want to be shot. You don't want to be locked up. You don't want to be beat down like Rodney King. You want to go home that night. So, yes, what Al Brown did was like none own individual before his time. There were many men that say nonviolence was the way, and that's what we should hold and be held accountable to. But for sometimes, when men have to stand up for themselves, for their own rights that have been given to them and guaranteed by the Constitution, when others ignore your rights, there has to be a point that ballot means something.
Make a left.
And so we have to go forward and vote. And I appreciate him ever so much.
Okay, let's try this one other caller, Brother Bilal, and we'll let you make your final statement for today. We're going to try a caller. They've been waiting patiently. Let's see if they have something to say. We can call off the last four numbers. Caller 0512, caller, your last four numbers, 0512. You have any questions or comments for Brother Bilal? 0512.
Well, while we're waiting for the next caller, I'd like to comment on what was said by the last caller. Appreciate this caller. Appreciate the sentiment of his call. But I would like to also advance a concept by a brother who won the election hands down in Jackson, Mississippi, one of the most racist towns in the country of America, Brother Chokwe Lumumba, who said that one of our greatest rights is the right to vote, is the right not to vote. And we can exercise our right not to vote as a block, just as we exercise our right to vote as a block. If we would exercise our right not to participate in the presidential election, because, and remember what we were taught, if those of you who were taught in civics in the early in school as junior high school, as the eighth grade, I remember being taught about the Electoral College. If we would exercise our right not withdraw our vote as a block, register to vote and withdraw our right as a bloc, we would be showing more power and more resolve to vote as a bloc toward our own choice of voting, and we would be resolved to develop our own choice rather than to vote for either of the ridiculous choices that are given to us to vote for by people who we don't have a right to vote for, and we don't even know who they are. So I would submit that our greatest right at this time is the right to think about how we are voting and how we are misusing our power and wasting our chances by going and running to vote for one of these two candidates, as Imam Jamil would say, you know, voting for Tweedly D or Tweedly Dumb, and not realizing that if we exercise our right not to vote as a bloc and decided that we were going to vote and put up and create our own jurisdictional boundaries, and that would be working toward a much greater right and developing much greater much greater power in our struggle for self-determination than voting for Tweedly D or Tweedly Dumb. But all of the other issues in terms of voting are very valid and are very much a part of our struggle for self-determination. But we should understand that what we need to project is not to project what's being projected, that falling into the system, but voting as a block to move out of the system, or with not voting, registering to vote, and then maintaining that block to say that we want our votes to be counted would be heard louder than throwing our votes behind behind two candidates, both of them who have disastrous histories in terms of their relationship to black people's self-determination.
Call your points out well made. We thank you for your comments. And right now, we'll go back to Brother Bilal's. We will ask him to give us his final thoughts and also share with our listening audience again how can they find out more information on Jamil Amin's case. Brother Bilal, the mic is yours.
Okay, we're pulling up right at the site of the rally. And I would like to encourage people to please, I don't have any more time, but please go to the website as we have outlined, www.whathappenedtorap and www.imamjamilactionnetwork.com. And that will give you loads and loads of information. And also you can call the number 470-451-8416. Get in touch with the Imam Jamil Action Network, and we'll be glad to serve you and help you serve him and encourage people. Free Imam Jamil. Free Imam Jamil and free them all.
On that note, Brother Bilal, we thank you for getting us an update and making our people well that this freedom fighter needs to be free. He's not going to be a missing pages. People going to organize like never before and have free all our people who are being incarcerated and oppressed. So we thank you for your contribution to today's program. To our listening audience, this is Missing Pages History Radio. We're going to call for a station break, and when we come back, we're going to be closing our program out with some Black Mini Facts by Susie, and we have a few final thoughts from Alex and myself. This is Missing Pages of History Radio, MPH Radio.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your life. Stand up for the right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, oh, tell me if heaven is on the gear. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a thought that Jesus told. I've that story and never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your life. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now when you see the light, you stand up for your right.
Yeah, oh yeah.
listening back to MPH Radio. Yes, to my brothers all over the world, stop shooting each other. And let's get together and organize and fight for a better humanity for our people. This is a serious time, so we must get serious. Let's get serious. Let's get serious and make our contribution free, and Brother Jamil Alameen. Let's get serious and don't forget the pledges that we made 25 years ago at the Million Man March, where we will help build our community, respect our sisters, and move our people movement forward. These are pages that we must write in our history book and not let them be omitted. So at this point in time, like always, we hope you still have your pen and paper. We're going to tell you a little something about some many facts dealing with your history. Then we can close the program out with a few comments by our members and contributors. So right now, we'll go to Susie. She will present some black many facts. MPH, Susie. The mic is yours.
The black minute facts today is coming from history.com editors, which is our Black History Facts, which was updated January 23rd, 2020, and its original date of existence was October 27, 2009. The first mini fact is dealing with population growth. The black population of the United States in 1870 was 4.8 million. In 2018, the number of black residents of the United States is 43.8 million. The next mini fact is an eminent scientist, which was George Washington Carver, who developed 300 derivative products from peanuts, among them cheese, milk, coffee, flour, ink, dyes, plastics, wood stains, soap, linoleum, medicinal oils, and cosmetics. And last and foremost, a mini fact, black mini fact from famous protesters. While Rosa Parks is credited with helping to spark the civil rights movement, when she refused to give up her public bus seat to a white man in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955, inspiring the Montgomery boycott, the lesser-known Claudette Colvin was arrested 9 months prior for not giving up her bus seat to white passengers. And there you have three mini facts from the History.com editors.
Thank you, Susie, and what we'd like to do at this point in time, be making that closing transition. We'd like to remind everyone that MPH Radio comes on biweekly. Our next program will be November the 7th at 1 p.m., same time, same station. So please share the word and pass it on to your network. Remember, without information, we can't think, and without organization, we can't think clearly. Those are two aspects of our movement that we are lacking in, and we want to improve upon it. And want you to come and join us. Help us fill in our missing pages of history. So right now, for our final thought tonight, our theme was Let's Get Serious, because this is a serious time. We'd like to ask Brother Alex give us his final thoughts. Yeah, about 90 seconds, Brother Alex, your final thoughts for today's program.
Yes, Mr. Lee, and to all the listeners. Yes, we are in a serious moment right now. And that serious moment, it's for your health care. It's for your job care. It's for your mind care. It's for your safety care. It's for all the cares that you can go forward with right now. So, as all the marchers have marched for centuries now against injustice and the right to vote, I stress the most important thing to do is you get to that ballot box and you make a choice. You make a choice on school bond. You make a choice on Medicare. You make a choice on law enforcement. You make a choice on government itself. If it's going to be by the people and for the people, because that's the only way united we stand, is because we're all in this together. So in the spirit of the Million Man March, I call for millions to walk out and vote. And vote because your ancestors were denied the right. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Brother Alex, for your contribution to today's program. Thanks, Susie. Thanks, Bilal. And all our listeners and supporters for supporting the radio station, MPH Radio. We would like to remind our supporters and those who would like to help build this institution that all support can be sent to Missing Page of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia 23261. That's P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, zip code 23261. We are trying to build the stations. There are projects, ongoing projects we're trying to develop, and we can't do no more than we can without the support for you and the community. So please help support MPH Radio. We would just like to say, in memory of the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March, to our brothers, don't forget your pledges that you made then, and continue to struggle to keep them. Whatever pledges you have made, they only can make our community better. They only can make humanity better. So act on that commitment in your word. Until next time, we see you on November 7th. Let's continue this struggle towards filling in our missing pages of history. And we'll leave you with music with a message. You got to be listening to MPH Radio.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more
and love for our nation would make a better society.
And if you had a choice of
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out. out on the streets. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than us, a little kid. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who's thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a queen, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Dear mama,
please, no one above you.
You all appreciate it. Nobody tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy, cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you. Cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps you was given. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone. Trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you,
sweetie. And dear mama,
please, no one above you.
You all appreciate it. Some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in. Then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. Cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm a dock of a bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on a dock of a bay, wasting time.
We'll solve everything. And the band played on. Out of hand.
Suicide, too many bills. Hippies moving to the hills. People